You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh my god. This is Hungover, a new mini-series where we follow some of our favorite theater artists on their way back to the stage.
We're going to be checking in with these artists before rehearsal, during rehearsal, seeing the process, and then afterwards during performances.
So you'll get a unique perspective on their journeys to getting back to normal.
So grab your hair of the dog, because this is Hungover.
Cheers!
Welcome to this week's episode of Hungover, an Equity One mini-series where we follow some of your favorite theater artists on their way back to the stage. I'm Elliot.
And I'm Caleb.
And we are here today with our friend Chris Medlin. Hi, how's it going?
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We're so excited to sit and chat with you.
Absolutely.
How have you been? What's going on?
Good. You know, we are navigating the chaos.
Yes. Yes, we are.
18 months later. Is it 18 months or is it like 19 now?
I think we should just say 19 at this point.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like it's been 18 months for a couple months. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, everyone's like, year and a half. I'm like, it's been a year and a half for 3 months, it feels like.
Yes, yeah. For sure. I think we're all just like, don't want to say 2 years.
2 years, because it's coming up faster than we think.
Oh, God, yeah. So
like,
fast.
November, December, January, February, March, like five months.
January is when you started being aware of things.
Exactly.
Like, feeling,
yeah.
Things are weird, something's happening. That's soon. It's October, basically.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
2019 was just yesterday. Like,
it really was. Ooh. Sip, sip. Today, we are sipping on Front Row from Intermission Cellars.
Yes.
What do we think?
Spit on us in the front row. That's what I like about it.
What do we think about this? It's good.
It's very crisp.
Light.
What do you think? Light.
I like it. It's got like a floral tint to it. It's very smooth.
Yeah. Well, here's Kristen and David to tell us a little bit more about it.
To some, the front row is the best seat in the house, reserved for the ones who want to be up close on the edge of their seat as the curtain rises. The front row of a vineyard catches the opening light as the sun rises, filling the grapes with enthusiasm. This white Rhone-style blend showcases that exact sentiment. It's dynamic, floral, complex, and refreshingly crisp. The Roussan varietal acts as our lead character, building texture within the layers of pineapple, honey, and apricot notes. Pair this wine poolside with a pre-show buttery dish or popcorn at Intermish.
This performance is dedicated to Chuck and Kathy. The front row blend is made up of 68% Roussan, 10% Grenache Blanc, 8% Marsan, 8% Viognier, and 6% Picpoul Blanc.
To order Front Row or any of the other Intermission Cellars wines, you can go to www.intermissioncellars.com.
Cellars with a C. And you can find us on Instagram at Intermission Cellars.
Thanks, y'all. Well, so, Chris, we start off every show by asking our guests what first got them interested in the arts when they were younger.
Oh. It sounds a little off the track, but Power Rangers is actually what did it for me.
Sure.
Okay. Which Power Ranger? All of them or the pink one?
Because
I love the pink Power Ranger.
The series, the concept of the show is what got me into like mimicking physical movement, that sort of world. And I just grew up singing. So when you kind of combine the two of mimicking physical movement and singing and then acting folds in there somewhere, like, yeah. So Power Rangers for me, unless you count like the Barney theme song.
Sure.
Was the jumping point.
Definitely counted.
I did have a blue Power Ranger bodysuit that I wore for many years. I was too big for it at the end, so that we had to cut the like the helmet off the top of it because it wouldn't fit anymore. So I just had a little like mock neck Power Rangers suit, like running around the house, jumping on everything.
We love that. I think I had a red Power Rangers.
I think I had a red one as well.
Yeah, classic.
I mean, there has got to be a Power Rangers musical that happened, you know, like a Networks tour or something. Remember,
there was,
like,
for sure.
There was like a small Goosebumps play that toured that I saw as a kid.
Yeah.
So if there was a Goosebumps, there had to be like arena Power Rangers on ice or something set to music.
Oh my God. Remember stuff on ice?
Everything on ice. Yeah, everything on ice. I just remember Toy Story on ice. I don't really remember.
Well, I went
else.
To Toy Story on ice as a grown adult. Thank you so much. Yeah. In college. We went.
Magical.
At the state fair.
Like a week before the shutdown. It
was, yeah, I just went, actually. It was amazing. No, very good. Very, very fun trip there.
What is, like, Power Rangers now? Like, because there were dinosaurs, then there were, like...
Oh, there's been so like many 20 different iterations, yeah. I think. There's
what,
been...
What was it about it that, like... piqued your interest so much?
I will say specifically I can't remember what the like theme of the series was. There was a movie I know where they went onto a pirate ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember the Blue Ranger was a kid, which I think is what was the like connection for me.
Uh-huh.
Out of the like, you know, young adult characters, there was one that was a child that was like 12. And when they would turn into their Power Ranger characters, he would become a grown man.
Oh.
Like, his, like, suit made him
bigger,
a full-fledged adult. And I think that that was the connection, because I was like, oh, it's a kid that gets to, like, do cool stuff mm-hmm. and, like, beat bad people up and, like, that kind of thing. I think was the, like, mental connection for me.
Yeah.
That got you started dancing, but then, like, when did you, like, what was your first musical experience?
Oh, so I grew up in a town that I compare to the location that Footloose is set in. There's uh-huh. no dance studios, no creative outlets, no like performance venue, anything like that. There are professional shows in the area. So I'm from Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, same hometown as Dolly Parton.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there are shows there. There are professional shows that I did later end up in. But at the time as a kid, there's no outlet whatsoever. I always sang. I liked to mimic movement. And then first grade, when we first moved to Tennessee, I... in my very independent self ways, had walked myself back to the school after school to audition for the school choir, which you had to have a parent with you. So she had to like send me home and like have my mom come back in the whole thing. Like she was like, I don't know how he's here. He has to have an adult with him. Did he walk here? Like I just like disappeared and then showed back up. But we did, I stayed with her as a choir director in grade school, and then in sixth grade, we did The Music Man. It was my first, like, stage show as a child.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the quartet, and I understudied Harold Hill as a sixth grader.
Come on, understudies. Oh my God, work. They were prepared.
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, there was a little theater, musical theater program through her little show choir. At my middle school. So it was like 6th, 7th, and 8th graders could participate. And you had to audition, you had to be cast. It was the full thing. Sometimes there was an A and B cast, which was always traumatic for some people.
Yeah. It's double cast, you learn from your double. Like.
Right, right. So we did Music Man. Was my first, I guess, like fully fledged stage musical experience.
Yeah, so that's how you kind of like started to marry it all together.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Seeing that you could do all of it in one
at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it is. It's always like, you know, you sing to the radio. You sing in the show choir at school. You mimic music videos on TV, like TRL, that kind of thing. And how do you stitch that all together is either, and I want to do both of them, but is either like musical theater or you go like the pop star recording artist route. And for me, what was accessible in its very small ways in Tennessee was musical theater.
So. You know, we're representing kind of like the
yeah.
We're all connected right
now. We have
now.
Ohio,
Kentucky,
Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all, like, bam. You know,
we would be, like, total tourists and always go to Gatlinburg for vacation. I fucking love it. Flapjack houses, mountains, they're gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area.
Traffic.
Lots of traffic. Uh-huh. A lot of good hiking. Some of my favorite hiking in the entire country is in my hometown, which is great. But, yeah, Gatlinburg, tourist trap, Pigeon Forge, more severe tourist trap. And then the little town that's next to it, that's actually where Dollywood is within the city limits of, is where my hometown was.
Did you get a chance to go home during the pandemic?
I did. So I stayed in the city through everything until January. And I drove down to Tennessee for 2 weeks to visit my grandma. And that was the first time leaving the city. It was the first time, like, leaving my neighborhood at all. Like,
right.
I had, yeah. Like, all of that. So that was my first time out for 2 weeks. And then I got back. And I've been here since, save for leaving for a few months for work.
Do you want to talk about that? I mean, once... So where were you? You were in Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Take me to, like, March 13th or whatever.
When that full time.
Yeah, yeah. Where were you the day you got the text?
Out.
So we were able to do 9 previews of Diana, which is my second show in the city. And our 9th preview happened. There was more of an inkling, because that would have been Wednesday night. So Tuesday and Wednesday, there's more of an inkling, an idea going around. You know, they had pulled stage door, they had pulled backstage guests, they had pulled all of those interactions with the front-facing public. So something more serious is, like, on its way to New York at that point, for sure. And then Thursday, we were in rehearsals, because we were still in previews, just watching our phones and not really getting a lot done, because creative teams watching their phones, we're not focused because we're watching our phones. And me and one of the stagehands were kind of like the point people for that day, that people kept checking in with us, on stage at least. And so we watched West Coast shows start going down, Harry Potter, and then I think it was Hamilton out there. For sure Harry Potter went down. Some regional show in Texas went down, and we were like, okay, it's coming. It's coming east.
Yeah.
It's coming east, like, really fast. Like, it's like you're watching a storm,
totally.
Like, across the country. And then Moulin Rouge went down because they had some confirmed cases in their cast, which was the first show in the city to shut down. And that was for one day. It was supposed to be for one day.
Yeah, because they have, like, Thursday matinees.
Yeah.
So
they canceled their Thursday matinee. And we were like, okay, that's... You have too many people out. It's like, you know, like an illness day at a school. Like, you're like, okay, cool, there's too many people out. And then Frozen pulled. And my exact words was, Disney canceled their shows, we're all going.
Yeah.
If Disney makes the call to close their shows for the moment, this city, here we go.
Where were you getting all the information from? Were you, like, on Twitter, like, checking, or were you, like...
I was reloading, like, 3 different news sources. The whole time we were in rehearsal, I was just on
like,
my phone.
They're like, Chris, can you get on your block? And you're like, yeah.
Oh, I maintained the blocking. The blocking was consistent, but I was on my phone.
You're, like, twirling, and you're, like, checking your phone, like...
Yeah. Just, like, mid-vocal, just checking my phone. But yeah, I was kind of the point person for the cast on stage, and once Moulin Rouge and Disney pulled their shows, we were like, okay, this is here we go. So then
something.
Entire rehearsal process, like, slows to a lull. And about a half hour later, our director, Chris Ashley, got on the mic and said, like, folks, take like a 10-minute break, then come gather out in the audience. And then we were given the news that we were going to shut down for what at the time was 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks is what they were expecting, and within a few days of that, we were informed that it was a full month, and then we all know that it extended and extended and extended, and here we still are for a lot of shows. And so Thursday, not really knowing the gravity of the situation either, our cast and several others, everyone, like, lightly packed up, because you're like, it's two weeks, like, that's
you can leave some
that's
stuff
good for
yeah,
my spirit
yeah.
like that's okay two
oh,
weeks
totally
like,
I got a haircut that
right
net
I was like oh I can
out.
Have
yeah,
I
yeah,
can
yeah.
have a 2020
Short haircut,
haircut.
Yeah, exactly,
like,
yeah,
I can
yeah.
put my fade back in the side
exactly.
Like, but it was not realizing the severity of it all. We all, like, headed to the bar and, like, had a great night with friends, not realizing we may have inadvertently hosted a super spreader.
Yeah. Hugged a lot of people.
Yeah. You're
kisses
like,
on the cheek. You're like,
we can,
oh,
not this.
Oh. This happened last time. It's fine. What bar did you guys go to? Just, like, go across the street? Or, like...
You know, I can't place the name of it right now. I think.
Amazon at this hour?
Girl, they make their own rules.
I think they can deliver till 9.
Till 9.
Yeah.
They just know.
He just
they do
somebody.
Know. You gotta stop answering.
Look,
you
guys
like,
look.
They haven't.
No, but they'll ring
sent,
again.
They're,
if
like,
you
they're
don't.
Like 18. They 18 will always let us in.
When I go back to work, they are just gonna be lost.
Where were we?
This is funny because I'm gonna leave that in because this same thing happened
with Brittany. Yeah.
Like, just so people know. Just so people
exactly
know like, what we go
and
through.
Also, like, it's not like I'm getting buzzed all day. Like, this isn't... It's literally only when we're recording.
It's like when you need the audio clarity. It's like when you're doing a tape.
The audience
a truck
loves
goes by,
it.
Like,
yeah.
It's always...
The audience loves me.
Yes.
Anyway.
Great. Where were we?
Let's see.
Super spreader.
Oh, super spreader, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We were talking about you being a super spreader.
Okay. Me being me specifically being a super spreader.
You started the East Coast pandemic.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, we packed up to some degree and headed to the bar, not realizing what was actually going to happen. I did, for some reason, I don't know what in my spirit led me to do this, I packed my entire station up. I took everything with me on March 12th that I could have ever left with that, like, I left my score and my script. That was fine. It can be dusty.
Yeah.
But I took, like, you know, the dressing station, like the towel, the decorative plants, the extra lights. Like, I took all of it with me. And I don't know why. My brain was like, it's 2 weeks, maybe a month. Take everything.
Yeah.
But then it worked out because I never had to go back to come in and pick up your stuff because now it's going to be 6 months, or come in and pick up your, you know, like a lot of our other cast members, like, they left full, like, makeup kits and things they needed but they couldn't get access to because it's all locked up. And for some reason I took every single item that I had brought into that theater out with me that day to the bar, and then I never went back.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But immediately, like you said, I immediately cut my hair. I think I was in the bathroom the next day cutting my hair. I cut it myself. So I cut my own hair, and I think the next day I was like, well, we have 2 or 3 weeks, like a fade will grow back out by then. I want my haircut.
Yeah.
I want to feel like me for this little vacation.
If I'm going to be out and about, you know, like, got to look my best.
And so, I did that. And at the time, it was like a chill thing, super relaxed. Like, okay, like, batten down the hatches a little bit, get your groceries. Mm-hmm. And then, I think Tuesday was when, like, delivery shut down in New York or something. Like, everything shut down on Tuesday. That started happening. And you're like, oh, this is, like, here we go. All right.
Yeah.
Should I leave the city? Should I stay? And then I decided to stay because I do live alone. And so it was easier and safer for me to just stay put.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't have to, like, I know where I go. I'm not worried about roommates. I'm not worried about, you know, family members. It's just me. And so I did decide to stay put and try to, like, make the most of it. I feel like this is a little bit of a shared sentiment. I know. Probably the week prior, I think I had verbalized that I, like, wanted just a little bit of a break. Like, I wanted a little bit of a break.
You started the pandemic.
Like, I take blame, too.
You, like, you asked for a break, and then you went to a bar. You did it.
I take blame, too, because I was doing the same thing.
I think
it was early 2020, you know.
I think I verbatim said, like, I just want to, like, take a break for a second and be able to, like, step away. And then I was forced to. Which was fine at the start of it. It just kept extending, as we all know, and getting a little more wild and a little more wild every time.
Now, in the midst of the pandemic, right here on 48th Street, I started seeing people I know around, and it was because you all were filming...
That is right.
Filming the show.
Our Mrs. Frizzle's field trips down the
sidewalk. Yeah, just all, like, basically holding hands down the sidewalk, masked up, face shields.
Yeah.
So you all were really early on that kind of filming process. I remember, like, that was when it was, like, unheard of. There was no work.
Yeah. It was a terrifying concept at the time. There was nothing going on. No one knew how to, like, operate in a group setting with a pandemic in the mix of it. We did, however, June of 2020, we did a Zoom lab to keep the show fresh because they weren't sure how long the extension was going to keep being. At the time, it was supposed to be, I think Labor Day was one of the dates we got for the end of the extensions. So we did a June lab. We did a 4-week lab to, like, review material, just keep it fresh. the cast didn't realize at the time that the team and production had already set up this entire elaborate plan to be able to film the show, record the cast album, even though we still haven't officially opened yet. And so that's what you were seeing was in, it started, I think, the late August, last weekend of August, through the month of September, that they brought us all together. We quarantined in a hotel that was just us, just the cast.
This is before Vax.
This is before Vax.
Yeah,
before,
wow. Like that's
before the election. I
mean, this was like, comes cold and flu season, and we were going into the first group experience we've had since March.
Yeah.
We were greeted by company management in essentially like hazmat suits because no one knew how to do any of this.
Yeah.
We had to quarantine within that hotel that was just for the cast, in our own rooms. We couldn't leave for anything for the first few days. They had to bring us our meals. They had to bring, like, if you needed anything, they had to bring it. Like, you need a bottle of water. You have to, like, call someone to bring it to you who's going to drop it at your door, knock, and run away.
That's insane.
And you have to open it, scoop it, and shut the door. And, like, that was our life for the first few days. And we were getting tested every single day until they decided that we had, like, established a COVID bubble.
Uh-huh.
That was safe for us to operate in. And then we did the first week of rehearsals. Well, two weeks in a ballroom in that hotel, restaging the show and reviewing the music again. But the first week of that was still in masks.
Uh-huh.
Because we, for the medical team's purposes, had not fully established that bubble.
Right.
So we could be together, but we all had to be in masks and be social distanced. And it was a wild process. And, you know, you're trying to run a 2-hour musical at, you know, full tempo, full performance level in a hotel ballroom with two medical masks on your face.
That's crazy.
Like dry heaving through like a sweaty mask, singing through that mask. It was a wild process, but we did establish that bubble. We were able to remove the masks in the performance area during rehearsal times, which is still what the like rules are doing.
Yeah.
That if you stepped off of that floor to go get water, run to the restroom, anything, that mask had to go back on.
Yeah.
And then what you were seeing, Elliot, was us walking down 48th Street with double masks, plastic face shields that looked like welding costumes, and our backpacks, and like not able to touch any doors. The company management had to do it so that they were the only one handling like public objects. We were shuffled back and forth. We couldn't touch anything.
You're like, don't talk to me. Like
it was when it, you know, you're passing. We pass like businesses, and at that point, people were starting to do things a little bit, and so you're passing your friends, and you're having to like shake your hands, like, no, don't come over here. Like, I'm in a bubble, even though I'm on the sidewalks of New York,
right?
Like holding hands with everyone else in welding gear that can't touch anybody else either. Like it was a wild thing. It was a little like dramatic in its own because you're watching the world kind of exist without you.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think did heighten the anxiety that I already had going into it. Just because of living alone, I hadn't dealt with a lot of those interactions.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So this was from mid-March, one Zoom lab on the internet by myself, and then here we go at the end of August. That was my first time being around more than, say, like two people that you'd pass on the sidewalk while you're like out for a jog trying to get some fresh air. Very overwhelming. Like you feel like a dog let off of a leash for us. Like you're like, I've gone rogue. Like I'm wild in this moment because I don't know how to act socially. It was exhausting, but it was a little scary. You start like, I know I'm bad about psychosomatically making myself feel bad when I am aware of that testing process at the beginning of it.
Like, I'm tired. It's COVID.
I'm like, I feel dehydrated. Got it. I'm sick.
Check in. You're like,
they're going to send me home. And then you get your negative and it goes away in like a half hour.
Yeah.
And it would happen every single day. And I have allergies. So like, I'd wake up in the morning in like a new space, new dust, new air system, all of that. And be like, I can't breathe. I'm sick. I've got to go. I burst the bubble. I'm dead.
Yeah. Like, but can I taste this? Okay. I can't taste this.
Yeah, it was a wild first few months, for sure.
I think the amazing thing about this recording is, like, we're going to love it because it's out, but like 20 years from now, looking back at it, and you're like, this was filmed in the height of the pandemic, before vaccinations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be a time capsule of Broadway history.
And, like, what it was like to achieve that product during this time.
Yeah.
Multiple COVID bubbles. Like, creative was in a separate bubble than the, like, camera crew. We were in a separate bubble. Like, all of it was super separate, so we couldn't. There was tape everywhere of you couldn't cross this line, they can't cross this line. Mm-hmm. It was rough. They tried to have, like, our dressers were supposed to be in full hazmat suits because they were their own separate bubble. Hazmat suits with shields on their faces, gloves on, all of that. And they were like, we can't do Velcro and buttons and, like, put people's ties on and stuff with gloves on. And I'm wearing, like, a welding cap. Yeah. Like, I can't see anything. So they had to find all of those, like, workarounds.
But luckily they could be, like, cut, we'll fix, we'll make this work somehow, right?
You would think.
You did a full run of the show?
We did several full runs of the show.
You're like, why are we doing this? Like, it's never going to be
We were like, can we please stop for two? Like, let me, like, put a towel on my face for a second. Or, like, grab a sip of water. No, we did full runs of the show so that we could maintain the like, energy of a live musical where you feel the, like, burst of people leaving as quickly as they needed to for a quick change that doesn't actually have to happen because we're filming it. But we're still going to do it unnecessarily, I guess. Uh-huh. But I do hope that hustle translates in the film. We filmed it with, I think, nine cameras going simultaneously. Cool. And we did, I think, four runs like that. All different levels throughout the house because we didn't have an audience at the time. Because it was scary still for the pandemic. So nine cameras filming at the same time. And then we did a few... like pickup shots with like a crane and an upstage camera trying to navigate how to get the shots they wanted and like what's going to look the best.
Because like when they film it for stage, they bring in another director sometimes who's like the film director.
Yes, yes. You'll bring in a DP just like you would for a TV or film project that's not a musical. Yeah. And they have to agree on like what showcases...
What's the
camera team's work, but what also showcases what the director is hoping that the audience sees. Because you do have a very special opportunity to, like, zoom in on the moments that they're supposed to be watching instead of the full stage where they get distracted because there's, you know, someone moving a table and they're missing the scene. You get to zoom in and miss the fact that someone came and scooped that table and you get to watch just the dialogue. So you do have a really special moment to kind of trim and, like, neaten up the storytelling through film. And I did see some of the shots as they would like, check the footage, on one of the monitors. And it's like, I think it's gonna be very special.
The trailer looks great.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah.
It's like, grand. On Broadway, fresh from New York. And you're like, we haven't seen anything yet. Please show us the musical. Yeah. Like, and you're like, oh, there she is. Like,
so funny. Yeah, no, well, by the time this comes out, it'll be out, so we will have seen it. But
October 1st.
I'm really, really excited to see it.
Are you going to have a viewing party, or are you just going to be by yourself? Like,
I have no idea. You know, I'm trying to figure out, because our cast album comes out on September 24th. That'll be out by now. 24th? Yeah, 24th. The film is out October 1st. And so right now I'm trying to decide when to squeeze in one last trip back to Tennessee before we start rehearsals, October 11th. And so I may be in Tennessee with family or I may be in New York with like closest friends or the people that I filmed it with. Like, it's like, I don't know what that journey is for me yet.
Yeah.
I could also be completely by myself because
it's intimate. And you're like, I just need to like process this.
Feels very pandemic of it all to like have to watch it by yourself too. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with a party of one.
No.
Yeah. Well, the Netflix scripted TV show that I'm on came out in May of 2020. So that, like, was a pandemic thing where I was like, oh, I can't gather all of my friends together or go to my family to watch, like, what is my first full speaking role on a television show, and it's 8 episodes out of a 10-episode season, and I'm not able to be with my family or my closest friends. Was a very strange thing to just kind of like, I mean, like, it's, you know, I know myself, I get a little awkward with like receiving compliments and stuff, but to just watch know people are watching it from afar but not be able to watch it with any of them is strange. It's weird.
I'm sure. And that was at the time when, like, streaming was, like, at everyone's kind
fingertips,
of, like...
Fingertips, yeah.
That was...
Gateway. You guys were, like, the top of Netflix. It was, like, trending, right. Like...
Yeah, we were the number one show for, I think, like, 23 days or
and
something.
And that's, like, that was very, like, that moment. We were all kind of, like, what are we watching? We're watching, like... So that must have been, like, cool, but also really strange.
Yeah, I think it did, for one, help, because it's going to drive more people to watch the show, because that's what we were all doing at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it did feel like an era of, there were a few weeks where, like, so much TV and film was coming out at the same time, because that was, like, Tiger King, that was The Circle, all that stuff was coming out at the same time, and... it was a little overwhelming as far as the material that there was to watch. But then I also think that people were needing more to watch, because that's all anybody was able to do. And so I think it helped our show. I mean, Sweet Magnolias landed in the top 10 Forbes list of scripted shows on streamings. I think it's all streaming services. But we're the top, I think it's family drama, romance drama, something like that. Because it's very, like, Gilmore Girls, Seventh Heaven. Like, it's very, like, family-friendly with enough edge and drama to, like, keep you interested. Super Southern, super sweet. But we landed in the number one spot for that category on the Forbes list. And I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
But also, like, there's people in there that have a draw. Like, it's, like, we've got Heather Headley. We've got Jamie Lynn Spears. We've got, like, Joanna Garcia Swisher. We've got, like...
Jamie Lynn.
No.
Controversial.
No. No.
Free Britney.
Good people, like, professional work setting.
Yes.
That was.
Of course, of course.
So, like, season comes out, and you filmed season two during the pandemic. Like, it happened.
Yes. Some of the timing things where, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic where we were all, I can only speak for myself. We were like, I would love, like, a step back, slow down just a little, and then it slowed down a lot. but it actually worked out in my favor. Great. Like, I'm very grateful for it. Because season one filmed in 2019, from July to October. And so we got our green light for season two, and they were looking at July to October, and then, everything shut down. So then all those schedules kind of, like, fly off the table. None of that's real anymore.
Right.
And so we're still, like, I'm like, is July to October happening now? Because, like, right now, I don't have to, it's not going to overlap Diana, because there is no Diana.
Right.
It's not going to overlap. I can do this. Is it going to happen? Okay, Georgia's, like, a shit show right now.
Yeah.
As far as it's like, red. It's super dangerous to be there as far as the pandemic goes. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't anything being greenlit for the state of Georgia for filming. So we were postponed. And I was like, okay, well, now, you know, Diana's not happening, but also season two can't happen yet.
Right.
Season one has already come out. Like, we need to, like, keep going. Like, I want this to, like, you know, keep the ball rolling. And then while we were doing the post Zoom lab for Diana, we found out that Sweet Magnolias would be filming minimum the following year. So I'm like, okay, well, now the issue is Diana going to come?
When's it
going to come back at the same time?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then I'm going to be it's going to screw up the schedules for me again. And then while we were waiting, and I was like, okay, I guess Sweet Magnolia season two is delayed, we found out about the Diana filming bubble and the cast album bubble, which was all inclusive. And it happened in September, when I would have been gone to film season two.
Yeah.
So then I was able to do that without any conflicts. We finished that. We got filming dates for season two. This could be tricky. Theater's supposed to start coming back, and then within a few days we got the official, like, it's not going to be till September.
And
I
was like,
and I just found out we were filming April to July, and
so
I was like, this worked, like, I didn't miss the Diana cast album and Netflix film. Season two was able to happen. Broadway pushed back a little further, and so, you know, like, season two we finished filming in July, and then I had, like, a 2-month gap before we start rehearsals. Like, I was like, this somehow, and I'm so thankful for it, but somehow this, like, schedule, like, spaced itself out to where it wasn't chaotic. Nothing was, like, overwhelming, but none of it overlapped.
Yeah.
It's because you started the pandemic and it was on your schedule. So, like, when are you ending it? Like, when are you going to end it?
Because,
like,
I packed up my entire station.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the reason why.
Because I took my towel home from my dressing station.
Exactly.
I took the fake plants home. It's my fault.
please make it end. And so now we're going to move to some quick cues. These are easy questions.
Oh, no.
We're going to back to, like, school days.
Okay.
Middle school.
Okay.
Elementary,
like, high school.
Like, which school? Like, what school?
Back whenever to somehow getting to the choir audition.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, back to school questions. Okay. Bring us childhood self there.
Oh, no. Okay.
What item of clothing did you treat yourself to for your first day back?
It was usually a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
Being a Southern kid, I always ruined my jeans over the summer. Like, they'd always, you know, grass stains, ripped knees, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was always a new pair of jeans.
Are these, like, Levi's, like American Eagle, Aeropostale?
American Eagle was the go-to for the longest amount of time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They make great jeans.
They make a great jean.
I think I still have a pair.
They used to last longer. I will say that.
Uh-huh.
When, before they started adding the flex stuff to it, they used to last longer because it was, like, the best denim you could find at, a normal person's price. And now this flex stuff, like, wears out very quickly, I think.
A big fan of their activewear, though.
American they have activewear?
Great sweats. They're super cute.
They have good sweats,
I haven't been into an American Eagle in years.
Shout out. And use code EQUITY1.
Similar, what you may like, is Uniqlo.
I love Uniqlo.
Their activewear is great.
Anything with a stretch.
Yes.
I know. It's
thankful
give
for.
Me an elastic waist.
Yeah.
Give me an elastic waist.
Thick thighs.
What's the most important school supply? You have the pen with the four different inks that you pop down.
Okay.
Journals or highlighters?
Journals. I'm a big notebook purchaser that never writes in them because they were, like, aesthetically pleasing and I just want them on my shelf. So there's, like, bookshelves and desks, like, full of journals that I've never actually written in that were given as gifts even that I'm not going to touch it. I don't want to write in it.
They're so pretty. Notebooks, did you hate it when you pulled the paper out and it had left all the paper strings? Or did you get the one that was, like, serrated?
Like,
and just
perforated,
like,
ones?
Yeah.
Like,
perforated, yeah.
Yeah, the perforated ones. Yeah. I usually got those, but my, like, little bit of, like, rough nature didn't care if it ripped out of the thing. Eventually I would, like, pull the little slivers of paper, like, out of the rings and, like, eventually I would clean it up. Yep. But
I was a big, it was the five subject notebook for me.
What was the brand that, like,
five? That's really
five,
big.
Five Star.
Five Star. Yeah. Had a grip on society.
Good.
Five Star notebooks.
Those were sexy notebooks too.
They were expensive. And, like, that's all I wanted. Yeah, I wanted, like, the hunter green Five Star notebook.
Yeah.
Like,
sold. Yeah. Bring it back to school.
Yeah.
What's the best crayon color name?
I like ones that sound like food. Like when you get, like, an espresso brown
lasagna red.
Lasagna red. Maybe a Tommy Tomato red. How about
Tommy
that?
Tommy Tomato. Okay. Did you pack your lunch or did you buy the hot lunch?
I was a subsidized lunch child, so I got lunch at school.
Word.
With, as I was saying, 7-year-olds having to memorize their social security numbers to be able to buy their lunch. But it was so that I could put the code in and then my lunch was free.
Did you get, like, we were talking about this with Brittany. It's like, you know, like French fries with everything. Like, what was, like, the hot lunch?
So if it's anything, I think it's to do with the South. My lunch options were always, it was two different options. There was a cold bar and a hot bar. Cold bar was typically like a sandwich or a salad or something kind of general. Hot bar every single day was Papa John's pizza.
Wow.
Our school had, like, a partnership with Papa John's Pizza or something.
Too.
And so, and it was, like, at a certain age, it stopped being the little, like, freezer pizzas that they usually provide.
Yeah.
And it started being Papa John's. And then that was, like, game over. But you could pay 50 cents for a side of ranch was, like, the thing.
That's expensive for ranch.
For children, too.
Yeah.
50 cents for ranch. And that was the thing that, like, everyone got ranch with everything that they bought. Because, again, it's Tennessee.
Yeah.
But yeah, the ranch was probably the ranch was the hot ticket item.
Yeah,
and then I usually used it like a food fight moment as well. But
troublemaker,
yeah, a little bit. You could make these. I called them ranch bombs. So not that you perked up. You're like, wait,
what?
So I called them ranch bombs. They had these very great soft dinner rolls that they would always have with the lunch options. But one of those, like, half dunked into some ranch dressing, launched across the cafeteria in any general direction.
Explosion.
And then back to what you were doing, was maybe like a weekly pastime of mine.
Oh my
God. Were you sent to the office a lot?
A little bit, but I like
I feel bad. For
little,
I know.
No, but, no, but like, but see, it was. I was also like a straight A kid and a lot of extracurriculars and what. But then it was like I had face piercings in high school. I threw ranch bombs in the cafeteria. I like would be late all the time. I'd show up with food from like an outdoor restaurant that I shouldn't have brought to the school, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I pushed the boundaries in ways that weren't really able to be punished, I guess.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
They're like, okay, like,
and the ones that could have been punished, I was never caught for, so.
There you go.
There it is. There
anyway, it ranch. Is. Ranch is the hot ticket item at the school cafeteria.
Your favorite class period?
Science.
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 Like biology, chemistry?
So I ended up, I was a bio major in school. Briefly for a year. Yeah, science is it for me.
Word.
Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, I was in choir. We had a classical competition choir, but it was an actual class during the school day instead of keeping us after. So you had to audition, you had to make it in, whatever. That was my only consistent class that I had every single semester all 4 years, but science was always for sure my favorite.
Cool.
Yeah. I was on, like, the fast track where I was, like, you know, two science classes ahead of where I should have been, and, like...
So you could have solved coronavirus by
but
like
instead,
being a scientist.
But instead, I went to the bar and I started it.
Hilarious. Okay. What's advice that you would give your younger self when they're going into their first day of school?
I feel like this is a little telling of, like, what teenage years were like for me, but just, like, not to take the year to come to heart. My experience through school and through high school, as a person of color in the South that likes the arts and was a singer and all of that was like not ideal. And as I got older, the years got easier because I started just kind of, sticking to my guns, I guess, in a way. And like not conceding to what was acceptable or trendy or whatever, and just kind of doing my own thing. And I think just to like not take what's to come to heart, would be my advice for myself.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for checking in with us. We're excited to talk with you a couple more times to see what the process is like. Where can people follow you on social media and listen to your music?
So on all social media, and Instagram, Twitter, all of it, I am at Mr. Medlin, MrMedlin. And I also have music on streaming, all platforms under Chris Medlin.
So listen, folks. Yeah, and obviously watch Diana out now on Netflix.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And season 2 of Sweet Magnolias next year at some point.
Coming soon.
So coming soon.
You can follow the show at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and TikTok and at Equity1_ on Twitter.
Send us an email at EquityOnePodcast@gmail.com and head over right now to your Apple Podcast app and give us a 5-star rating review. It really helps other listeners find us and helps us out. Yeah. Elliot, where can we find you?
You can find me at Elliot Maddox on everything. Caleb?
Caleb Dickey on everything. And until next time,
cheers.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.